Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRTLP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. You can find us online anytime at kdrt.org/Davisville. I'm Bill Buchanan. I'm your host. Thank you for tuning in today. The public schools are one of the key attractions of Davis, but conditions are creating a realistic chance that the community will close one or two of its schools in the years ahead. It's not a prediction, it's a possibility. Why? Student population is declining, not just here, but all over. But people are having fewer children, and Davis isn't increasing its population enough to compensate for the decline. Now, the way you think about growth in Davis is probably determined by more than just the size of the school district. Traffic, crowding, sense of dislocation, these are usually greater influences on whether Davis wants to get bigger when the issue comes before the voters. But the impact on schools is part of the story. And Matt Best, superintendent of the Davis Joint Unified School District, has been pointing this out for a while, especially this spring. He's here with us today on Davisville to talk about all this. Matt came to Davis in 1995 to attend the University of California, Davis. He joined Davis Schools as a teacher. He was later principal of the Da Vinci Junior and Senior High Charter Schools, and he's been district superintendent since 2021. Matt, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You know, this story starts with the numbers, which are striking, and I guess I'd like to understand them a little better. The district enrolls about 8,250 students today, right?
That's correct.
And your forecast is 100 fewer students for each of the next 10 years if no significant new housing is built?
That's correct. It's an interesting story in Davis. The number of students has been, resident students has been declining pretty steadily since the early 2000s. And really that started at the time when the university had been growing, the city had been growing, and I think residents were feeling the stress of a lot of new residents in a relatively short period of time. Our schools were very full at that period of time, and inevitably the voters passed a measure that limited peripheral development, and that had a pretty dramatic effect almost immediately on the district's population. Just a couple of days after the resolution, the measure passed, the school board decided to build a couple of new schools, Harper, Korematsu, and Montgomery Elementaries. And the net effect of that was we had more seats than we needed because the resident student population started to decline. And it's been declining ever since, yeah. And really in a disproportional way to what we see with our neighbors in West Sacramento and Woodland.
Yeah, they've been growing quite a bit. And my wife and I had two kids who go through schools, and we sort of lived through what you're describing. At one point, one of our daughters had friends who they had lived in town, they moved out of town, they wanted their kid to keep going to school, and there was no room for them here because the school was too crowded. And of course, now, years later, there's what, about 1,300 students?
About 1,300 non-resident students attending our schools.
Yeah.
And about 95% of those are what we call residents by employment. So their parent or guardian works in Davis 10 hours a week or more. And that's a unique situation. We've got the county's largest employer here in Davis with UC Davis, the district's the city's second largest employer. And a lot of folks are bringing their students to our schools and working somewhere here in town.
Yeah. And that's state law, as I understand it, right?
That's right.
The state says if you have a connection to a town and then the district can accommodate you, then...
And if we have space, for good, bad, or indifferent, when you're declining enrollment, you have open seats. Yeah. And so we fill those with those non-resident students. And that's helped to keep our district enrollment relatively static over the past decade. It wasn't until 2020 we started to see a softening of that non-resident student number. And that's one of the things that's contributing to that 100 student year-over-year decline into the future.
Okay, well, that was one of my questions, was whether you expect the students who don't live in the district, do you expect that number to drop as well then as the ones in town?
We've definitely seen some softening. I think that decline, that 100 student year-over-year decline, has probably got four main factors. One is that softening of non-resident students. And we think that it started post-pandemic, and we think that that's partly due to what's going on at UC Davis. You've got folks working virtually more often. You've got a lot of operations moving to Sacramento. And if you're a kindergarten parent and you are thinking about bringing your student to Davis for school and you don't live here, not working here in town every day is a significant challenge to bring your student. And then you mentioned it earlier, but the other big factor driving some of this decline is declining birth rates. We have seen significant declines in birth rates across the state and in Yolo County, like many counties throughout the state. Interestingly, the number of students in Yolo County over the past decade has remained static, despite this significant decline in the number of resident students in Davis. So that has to mean somebody else is growing.
Yeah, well, that's West Sacramento and Woodland primarily.
Right? That's right.
They've grown quite a bit.
That's right.
Okay, so 1,000 students equals 2 elementary schools.
That's about right.
There's eight currently.
Yeah, when we're about at our student population, resident student population that we were in the mid-90s, around 7,500 students. And at that time, we had two fewer elementaries and one fewer junior high.
Yeah. So the point is, if you had to close two schools, that would be a big change.
We closed a school about 15 years ago, Valley Oak Elementary, which is since converted to Da Vinci High School. And really at that time, we had too many schools because that projected increase in student population didn't materialize. The district had too many schools. And just the closing of that school, it still has lasting impacts on our community, amongst our staff in particular, and many longtime Davisites remember that's been our only school closure in Davis Joint Unified. And it was at a time where the town's population was relatively stable. Yeah. This is a different sort of scenario when we think about changing beloved public schools and the way they're organized. One of the things I love about Davis is people are many multi-generational families attending our schools, and they have a deep connection to them.
Growth is one of those hot topics in Davis.
It is.
Has been. I've lived here 45 years, all the time I've been here and before. When you raise this issue, are you meaning to recommend that the city should build more housing for families, or is your point to just point it out and say, look, if we don't, this is what's going to happen?
That's a great question. So as an educator at heart, I feel like one of my roles in our community is to educate folks about the context in which important decisions are made. And in my time in Davis, much like yours, I hear a lot about the projects, the traffic, the impacts, the environmental connection. And rarely are we talking about housing in schools. And I think that's been partly happening because the district's enrollment has been relatively stable over time. And that's no longer the case. So I think we are trying to enter this conversation to provide some context, some backdrop to the decisions that we make as citizens and the impacts those are going to have on the things we care about most. And
So, I don't mean to put you on the spot. Maybe I do a little bit here, actually. But do you have a personal opinion? I mean, do you think Davis should build more housing for families?
I think we need to have a more stable growth rate in housing so that the population distribution remains relatively stable over time. And that allows the school infrastructure to maintain over time. It allows us to better maintain our city infrastructure. It allows commercial and industrial sectors of our city to remain relatively stable over time. And I think that's how you have a more healthy community. I think about when I came to Davis in 1995 and I came to play football for the Aggies. And one of our projects every year was to read to the elementary schools. And that allowed us as college students to really have a connection to the community. And we would at times be invited to people's homes for meals. You know, when we were out at the parks, you would see the children that you met in the classroom that attended our football games to see that connection. And when I visit the parks now, there's just so many fewer children. There's just less connection with the youth of our community because there just are fewer in proportion to the size of the town. And so I think we as citizens are going to have to decide what type of city we want to have into the future. We know we can't control what the university is going to do, but we can control what our city looks like despite that reality. And I think ultimately, for us as a school district, we're going to be the size that we are. We're going to adjust to whatever that size is, whether it's getting bigger or getting smaller. But I think right now, when we think about the size of our schools, the infrastructure that we have, from my opinion, that's just right.
So would it be fair to say that you, maybe just speaking for yourself, would like to see the city add more housing for more people, for more students? But if you're talking stable, you're talking about something that isn't necessarily huge. You just would like to maybe see it stop declining?
I would definitely stop declining. I think we're in a place where if we have 3,000 or 4,000 units of housing come into the market over the next decade, that will keep our district around the same size. And then the city's going to have to decide in the next 20 or 30 years, does it need to have a more stable growth rate? or not to maintain that reality.
You know, I was thinking a little bit, of course, about the types of housing. And I mean, you've made the point, too, and I think this happens kind of organically, that students, where they live in a town tends to change over the decades.
That's right.
And you can see that in Davis. I mean, the elementary schools aren't in what was Davis 50, 60, 70 years ago. They're in the newer parts of town. So there's some change regardless. I think you've said that even if the city added more housing and population didn't decline anymore, you would still have to redraw attendance boundaries.
Yeah, I don't see a scenario in the next decade where we're not going to be redrawing attendance boundaries, whether there's housing or not. And I think we've seen some of that shifting over the last 25 years. And we've done that primarily through the movement of choice programming. Right.
So like Da Vinci.
Yeah, like Da Vinci is a great example. So as there was the large housing developments in the 90s and early 2000s, as that student population rolled through the system, we had more secondary students and we needed more seats at the secondary level. So you make programming adjustments. You know, sometimes you have to redraw boundaries when you do that. But I don't see a scenario, whether there's more housing or not, where we're not going to have to redraw boundaries, because we just don't have enough students living where the seats are currently.
And of course, that can be tough for a community to go through. People get used to their neighborhood
that
schools.
That alone is a big challenge. That's right.
The other point here is the types of housing, who you're building for. UC Davis obviously has brought a lot more students to town.
That's right.
And student housing is very different than family housing. If someone's building a new apartment complex primarily for students, that's not going to generate a lot of students, K-12 students for the Davis School District.
Yeah, that's right. Every year we do a demographic report. One of the things that's in there, is called a student yield factor. So we look at all the units throughout the city, apartments, multifamily, single family housing, and how many students are yielded by each type of unit. And currently the highest student yield factor is in single family homes. And then of course, multifamily homes and then apartments have the lowest student yield factor. So when we think about what type of housing is going to yield students, we can do some predictive analysis. Our current yield factors are based on the Cannery, which is our most recent development in town and has a little bit of all of those housing types. So that's one of the ways we think about the housing that is in the pipeline or expected pipeline to determine how many students we think might be yielded there.
Yeah, and when I think about this subject from a growth perspective, as opposed to a school's enrollment perspective, it becomes really important what kind of housing and where. Davis could add 5,000 units for students and help the students, which is great, the college students, I mean. But that really wouldn't necessarily make any difference at all for you guys, or a very minimal one.
And that's what we've seen in the last 25 years as the universities, you know, from the 90s, it's 16,000 students more, larger than it was. And the primary housing that's been built in the last couple of decades has been apartment-style units that don't really yield many students over time. And so I think that's going to need to be another discussion we have about, you know, there was when the university was growing and there just wasn't much housing, apartment or single family homes being built, that put a lot of pressure on the housing market. And, you know, as a former economics teacher, supply and demand is real in a market economy. When you have low supply and high demand, you're going to see the kind of premiums we have on apartment and for sale homes.
Davis was going to have a vote this year on one of the major housing developments proposed. And that's been put off now till 2026. None of these things get built quickly, you know, when
That's
they get
right.
approvals. So let's say both of the major developments are approved. Let's say voters approve them. Is it going to be soon enough? I mean, even if it was, because even if these things were approved, you're probably still 4 years out before you'd have a lot of students coming out of those new homes, right?
Yeah, it's really a great question. So I think I can tell you what the considerations we are watching closely as a school district. One is the state budget. We get the most dollars that we receive are from the state budget. We are, to most people, surprised, one of the lowest funded school districts in the state. In 2022-23, we were number 18 out of about 1,000 districts at the bottom.
Yeah, and you should explain that, because I think it does surprise people, and that has to do with the idea that it's sort of an equity thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, so there's sort of two factors. One, after the Great Recession, the base educational funding got reset back to the pre-recession era, adjusted for inflation. But there was really no discussion at the state level of whether that was enough dollars to educate every child. And so I think that the base dollars was misaligned to start with. And then there's this equity-based funding formula where the reality is it takes more dollars to educate students furthest from opportunity. It's a philosophy that I personally agree with. However, as time has gone by over the last 15 years, the difference between that base funding and the dollars that other districts receive has gotten quite large. So when we think about what that means in terms of real dollars, Woodland Joint Unified, Washington Unified, and West Sacramento, similar sizes, both receive more than $10 million more in funding to educate their children. And that the distance between their average funding and our funding gets larger every year.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real challenge for us as a district.
And typically, the Davis has kind of covered some of that by having the local taxes.
That's right. We get about 80 cents to the dollar to the average funded district on the natural. And the parcel tax make up about 10 cents of that difference. So that's one factor that we're watching really closely.
The state funding is one of the,
That's right. The second big factor that we're watching is those demographics reports. They come out in the spring of each year. They're tracking birth rates, sort of what's happening in the in and out of students in each and every year. And that helps us plan because we have to hire staff, release staff, all that stuff happens in the springtime. And then we know that we see smiling faces arrive in the fall of each and every year, and we can reconcile our projected numbers with how many students actually show up. So as we are looking into the future, those are the three things we're really watching closely. If we see more decline than 100 in any given year, that's cause for great concern. If it's a little less, that might buy us a little time. State budget's worse, that's going to increase the pressure on the sort of economic reality of declining enrollment. State budget's a little better, might buy us a little more time. So I think those are sort of the factors we're watching as we move into the future. But we know that if the trend line is headed in this direction without any factors that are going to change it, that's
okay.
It's just a matter of time, really.
I take your point here. I was going to ask, like, how many hundreds would it have to drop before you would pretty much have to close a school? And it sounds like you're saying that that number would change depending on state funding and even just the trajectory a year or two ahead.
That's right.
Okay.
So I think, the way we're looking at this challenge now is the Board of Education is going to make a decision in the fall of 26 about what the plan is given the conditions that we have.
Okay.
Which means that by the 27-28 school year, we're going to have to start to actuate some change if there's no new development. That may be preparation for school closure or consolidation. It might be changing the kind of models that we have for elementary schools in particular, because that's where we're seeing the decline most dramatically. And we need to start making some structural changes in the 27, 28, or 28, 29 school years. I think that's our sort of target year, depending on those challenges. My philosophy as superintendent is we can't have any surprises. We need time as a community to talk about these challenges. We solve our problems best as a community when they're out in the daylight and we're having robust discussion about the solution set. And we're going to need to start that discussion in the fall of this coming year because votes are uncertain, whether these developments even make it onto the ballot, whether they actually get constructed. All those things are unknowns into the future. And we know that if this trend line continues, we have to start making adjustments.
Right. A quick station ID. We are talking with Matt Best, superintendent of the Davis Joint Unified School District. And we're talking particularly about the idea of growth of housing in Davis and how that affects school enrollment in the district and how it affects the future of the district. I'm Bill Buchanan. This is Davisville, KDRT, 95.7 FM in Davis, California. So there's a couple other factors that go in here, too. I was looking at average daily attendance. That's part of the state funding.
That's
and,
right.
And the district has said that for each 1% drop in attendance costs the district $1 million a year. Now, if I looked at the eddata.org website, tell me if these numbers are right. Average daily attendance for 2023-24 was about 7,300. Pre-pandemic, it was about 7,650, something like that. So that's down a few hundred. And of course, that was a well-told story that the pandemic did a lot of bad things to attendance.
Yeah. And to bring some color to those particular numbers, those don't include Da Vinci Charter Academy, which has about 500 students.
Okay.
But I'll give you a different number around average daily attendance. And just the listening audience understands, average daily attendance is, we're one of the few states in the country that still use this model.
Yeah, because you're paid per ADA in this.
Yeah, case. That's right. It's quite ridiculous because we have fixed costs as an organization, right?
Yeah.
We have to have a teacher in the classroom, keep the lights on, regardless of how many students are in the room or how frequently they attend. And so that's a really challenging environment to live on when You have a fixed cost to run a classroom, regardless of how frequently the students are attending, but you're going to get a variable revenue based on that. So our attendance rate pre-pandemic was around 96%. And post-pandemic, it was down in around 92%. And that number has been creeping up slowly post-pandemic. This current year, we're at about 93.5. We're hoping to break the 94 number for this next year. But as you mentioned, each one of those percentage points of attendance equals about $1 million.
Yeah, so I guess
your fixed costs are the same.
Yeah, and I guess there's two ways to look at that. One is the state could change the ADA rule and say, you know, we'll pay you for, you know, per student per year sort of
thing. One could hope.
But failing that, if you can bring that up back a few percent, that brings a few $1 million
back. Makes a big
difference.
That's right.
And how much does that mitigate what you're talking about with the housing overall?
It really buys us time.
Okay. So it's one of those factors you were talking about.
Yeah, that's right. If revenue goes up and costs remain the same, it buys you time. The same is true for a transitional kindergarten. This coming fall, we've added another grade to public education for all four-year-olds are going to be eligible for what's called transitional kindergarten. So as that number's been building over the last couple of years, it's essentially buying us some time. It's offsetting the decline in kindergarten to our kindergarten cohort. So once transitional kindergarten builds out, kind of meets its saturation point, then we're going to really feel whatever the true decline is after that.
Okay. There's one other category I want to talk about in this area too. And of course, that's students who go to private schools. I don't know if you have stats for Davis, how many students who live in the district go to private schools. I looked at a couple of the websites for like St. James. They have about 300 students, but they're not all just from Davis, nearly 300. But from Davis, Dixon, Winters, Woodland, Waldorf, more than 225. I don't know where they come from, but I imagine similar thing.
All over, yeah.
But I also saw this. Now, this is from Cal-Ed, and it said that statewide, about 8% of students, I think for K-12, go to private schools. In Yolo, it's about 7%, if I calculated.
Yeah, there's not a great way for us to know what proportion of Davis residents attend private schools. They don't have the same reporting requirements that we do as a public school agency. We do know that we have students join our school district from private school when they transition. So St. James students sometimes will come to us for junior high and high school. They may go to Jesuit or Christian Brothers, for example. Same with Waldorf. We see many students transition into Davis Joint Unified in junior high and high school. So we know that there is some non-zero number that come to us, but no good way for us to predict what that number is.
Any way to try to attract some of the students into the public schools?
So we view ourselves as a choice district. Many public schools don't see themselves as needing to compete. I think part of our ethos as a school district for the past 20 plus years has been we have to provide a quality product for folks to choose to bring their students to Davis, whether they're resident or non-resident students. And we do a lot of great work. One of the things that, as I've been doing these community presentations, we talk about all the great things that make our schools so vibrant: high graduation rates, excellent programming with a wide variety. Your students and mine both have choices in the district, and that's really great for them as individuals to have programs that are designed to meet their needs better than some other choice.
I'm just anticipating that if it really came to the point where it's like, okay, we're going to have to close schools, I could see people saying, well, is there any way to bring in some of those students?
They're already saying it. Yeah, that's part of the community conversation. Part of it is how do we improve or increase those non-resident students' numbers to have them not soften? And then the other part is there any way we can attract students away from the private schools in town?
So is there any way?
I think that is such a personal choice for each family about what sort of calculus they use to decide what is it most important for them. But part of what we are really working to do is listen to what our community is saying about education. So one of the things we have been hearing, especially at the elementary age, is it's childcare is very expensive. So we've launched what we call our Spark program. It's essentially a district-sponsored childcare before and after school childcare program. It's free for students that qualify for free and reduced lunch. It's lower cost than many of the alternatives in town. We have district preschool now. We're moving to all-day kindergarten. So when our students were in kindergarten, right, they had a half-day program, so full-day kindergarten is launching. So those are things that help young families to choose Davis if they're thinking about attending somewhere else, or at least provide a more equal level playground in terms of making that decision. So they're making the decision based on a sort of programmatic level. Do I want a parochial school because we've got a faith-based family that really wants to choose that instead of an economic decision where it's less expensive to send my child to a parochial school or a private school than to pay for that after-school care.
We have just a couple minutes left, but you know, I'm sure you've heard it. Some folks have said, well, you know, if Davis does have to close schools, it's just the way life is sometimes. You know, places have to adjust their size according to demand, which is not to say that it can't be quite difficult.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think I've got two. One, the economics of declining enrollment are really challenging for school districts. And part of it is the way public employment law works in California, where you can only, our 85% of our budget is people. You can only reduce those personnel expenses once per year in March for the next year. So that makes a really challenging environment to keep your staff the right size for the projected number of students. Number two is we are in the worst teacher shortage the state and the country has ever seen. So waiting on hiring has a detrimental effect on learning, right? The folks you can hire in August when you know how many students are showing up are not the caliber of employees that you can hire in March when you're making speculation about how many students show up. And the other reality is, you know, in any given year, you can really only cut about 40% of that lost dollar of revenue. And so it takes you at least 2, sometimes 3 years to cut the expenses to that lost dollar of revenue. So what ends up happening in real time as you're declining is you keep squeezing that budget until you make a shift change. And that shift change is a school closure, consolidation, model change, where you shed the sort of structural cost, the overhead cost of a school site, a full-time principal, a full-time counselor, whatever that might be that comes per school instead of per classroom. And I think what happens in the middle, and we're experiencing this right now, is that means increased class sizes, really tight budgets. Those things, the nice-to-haves, just aren't happening right now. And those won't happen again until we either stop declining or make a shift change or bring our enrollment back up to a place where our structure is designed to be. And that's about 8,600 students total.
Okay, so it's difficult to close. Sounds like administratively very difficult because of the way the laws are and such, but also to the nature of the schools themselves.
That's right.
That, you know, you kind of shrink and then you make a big change. But there's ways to do it, I'm sure, if it...
It's not an unknown phenomenon in California. Many districts around the state are closing schools. Some counties have declined 15% enrollment over the last 10 years, and they've closed 10 or 15% of their schools in that corresponding period of time. I mean, these are solvable problems. And part of what we're going to be talking about in this next school year with our larger community is we've got a plan for one of two scenarios. One, we see housing on the horizon, and we've got a plan for a reboundary if those students arrive. And then the second path is there is no new housing on the horizon, and we've got a plan to close 2 or 3 schools over the course of the next decade. And how are we going to solve that problem as a community? Right. And one of the things that I've learned talking with superintendents around the state is the thing that they wished they would have had when making those decisions is time. Time to talk about the challenge, time to talk about the academic program that we want to see, and not just make the problem about the finances. Okay. Because when you're making a financial decision, sometimes the academics, the instructional program can take a second seat.
Right. Well, we'll have to end it there. I imagine this conversation is going to be continuing probably in a variety of different ways.
But I think so.
Matt, thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you, Bill.
I've been talking with Matt Best, Davis Joint Unified School District Superintendent, about housing in Davis. I'm Bill Buchanan. This is Davisville, KDRT.org, 95.7. Thank you for listening.